That dude doesn't even matter anymore now that Spieth's back.
Yeah, your guy is back. I mean, Spieth is back. You know,
back.
Like, he is back. You ever interview Spieth?
No, I mean, it's the one thing that my job does not give me the opportunity to do. Otherwise, I would hang out with golfers all the time.
Yeah, good guy. You'd like him. Very, very humble, very down to earth. So, okay. So let's start with Tim Banks. Pete Thamel's reporting that not just being a candidate, but he thinks that he's on the verge of taking the Tennessee defensive coordinator job. What's your information? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's. I guess that's my jumping off point is that I'm not sure what efforts, if any, are being made to retain Tim Banks at Penn State. Right? I mean, certainly James Franklin has had what I would describe as a long history now of, you know, his assistants being poached, right? And so, you know, sometimes it's for an obvious promotion, which he has long been, you know, in favor of. You know, he's never going to stand in the way of a guy getting, you know, a head coaching gig or a coordinator gig. But if this report to Tennessee is accurate and it's the sole DC job, then obviously, I mean, you know, Penn State's probably not going to be able to do anything to convince him to stay. But if it's a co-DC role, which is what he already is with Brent Pry at Penn right. State, then, you know, that would be a different story and something that I would guess James Franklin is probably trying to stand in the way of. You know, obviously, by offering better compensation here at Penn State.
Right. And let's face it, it's not just the ability to be a sole defensive coordinator, but also there's money that's involved in this as well. And Tennessee has been known to be very free with the football money. How about that?
Yeah. No, well, in a variety of ways, right, Steve?
Variety of ways, yes. Variety of ways.
No, I mean, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, I was chatting with a buddy earlier today. You know, James Franklin's coaching tree is remarkable at this point. I mean, the number of guys that have been through Penn State, you know, during his tenure and have gone on to take bigger, better jobs is pretty remarkable given the context of Penn State's most recent history, right? I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about 195 million combined years on Penn State's coaching staff under Joe Paterno, and that's just right. That's just not the case anymore. That's just not the new reality, you know, at Penn State.
And in the broadcast booth. All right, so... all right. I opened yesterday's basketball broadcast, and, you know, you try to be frank with everybody up front with about what the stakes of the day happen to be. And I said there are certain games that are under the line in the sand, need to win this game. I said there are also games on the schedule that, quote, you can't lose. I said this is one of the games. They lost it. Yep. Your thought, the last four games, your thoughts on what was seen then, which dovetails into what happened yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I think, is it the one that buries them? No, not necessarily, given the fact that there are so many opportunities that continue to exist, right? I mean, if you knock off four top 25 teams on your way out, then sure, you're going to put yourself back in the conversation. But that's at this point, that's a distraction from the reality of what this team is, right? And what this team is currently is one that can't score. And you just
which is shocking, because that's not what they were before this.
Correct. And it's just a complete departure from the thing that they had going for them, the thing that made them such a potent team. You knew that it wasn't going to happen every single night, but it was their variety of scoring, right? It wasn't just that Myron Jones could go off for 20. It's that Brockington could go off for 20. Lundy could go off for 20. You know, you have these combinations of scorers who can all do it in different ways, and that's supposed to be, you know, your ammunition. That's supposed to be what allows you to compensate for the fact that, you know, there are some deficiencies elsewhere in terms of what they're able to do. But, you know, look, so they scored 61 yesterday. They've had four straight games, you know, scoring 61 or fewer points, which is essentially, other than the Michigan game earlier in the season, those are like the four lowest scoring games that they've had all year. And they're all happening all in a row. And they managed to get a win in one of them against Maryland. But overall, you know, they've just lost their ability to compete the way that they need to be able to win games at this level.
Well, Dick Girardi sat down and ran numbers this morning and sent it to me. You know, and he went through everything. You know, their offensive rebounding is still terrific. Their steal numbers, while not where they were before, are still great. They're forcing turnovers, so they're getting extra chances.
Yep.
But the bottom line is, and by the way, the free throw discrepancy, which was horrible and illogical before for various reasons, and I will not leave that up to your imagination, has been eliminated.
Yeah,
I mean that's been eliminated. That's not even in the conversation anymore.
Yep.
Penn State in the last four games is 80 of 234 from the field, 34.2%. In other words, they're averaging 20 baskets a game, too. They're 55 of 133, 41.4% on twos. 25 of 101, 24.8% on threes. And then to really tell you that life is screwy, they're 45 of 55, 82% at the line. I mean,
yep.
Figure that out.
No, look, I don't think that there's, you know, over the years we've always had these conversations about whether or not they're getting open shots, right? Coaching is about getting open shots. You can't make the shot go in, but your ability as a coach, generally speaking, in the profession, is rated on your ability to get open looks for your guys.
Exactly.
I think that the quality of the shot has been there for the majority of the past four games, but they just don't go in. I mean, it's uncanny, but you know, every time yesterday, and now I'm just speaking about yesterday, every time that Penn State had the opportunity to produce any type of run, I mean, they really like. Yeah, they went on a 12-0 run, I guess, when they were down 11 to finish the game because Nebraska just completely clammed up and couldn't score at all. But that wasn't even really a run, right? Like, Penn State had so many opportunities to make difference-making baskets that would go halfway down and pop out. You know, just good looks that just did not go in. And even at the very end, you know, you've got this extended possession for a minute in crunch time. You get two offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
And two great looks. You know, it just, the opportunities have been there. Penn State has not been able to capitalize on them. And as a result, they're in huge trouble.
Well, and that's, and the issue on the shooting part, you're right about the open shots, because Dick and I have repeat, you and I know, you listen to some of the broadcasts, that's where it doubles our ratings, that we'll talk about it's an open shot or it's contested.
Yep.
They've had a lot of open shots during the course of this four-game streak, a lot of open shots. Yesterday, they had one open shot after another. Now, let's... And you got to be honest with the audience. Okay? I don't include Jamari Wheeler in that open shot stuff. I don't.
Yep.
And the reason I don't is he is open for a reason. Okay? Yep. He has to make a couple in a game for somebody to come out and finally play him. So he's open for a reason. Right? The other guys are not. And they're just missing. I mean, can you dial up a better end of the game play for Miles Dredd at Michigan State?
Yep.
Miles Dredd, he's open in the corner. Wide open. Yep. I mean, I'm talking about that's a practice gym jumper.
Yep. Yep. And that's, you know, I mean, it's hard because it's not, Jim Ferry said it yesterday, it's not for lack of trying. You know, it's that, like, Miles Dredd's a great kid. Myron Jones is a great kid. Brockington, great kid. Like, you know, they're trying really, really hard. And I, you know, certainly from my end, and I know from your end, you don't want to make it seem like you're piling on, but that's their job.
Right? Well, like, sure it
their
is.
Job
right.
is to make shots, given those opportunities, you know, in those very specific situations. That's what separates winning and losing. You had a Nebraska team who did everything that it possibly could to give that game away.
And, usually you go on a 12. You know, there are two ways of going on a 12-0 run, Nate. One is with a sledgehammer. The other one is with paper cuts. Okay, that was 8 minutes of paper cuts.
Yep. Yeah, and like I said, I mean, you know, there are it's hard to describe after the fact, but there are these moments where games can be controlled. Games that aren't in control can be taken by one team or the other. And Nebraska had those opportunities too, right? When Penn State was really struggling shooting the ball at the beginning of the second half, Nebraska had a chance to put that game away, and they didn't.
And didn't.
Right?
Didn't.
They went up 11, but it was never really in Nebraska's control. Penn State had that same opportunity coming down the home stretch. And, you know, it just was not it was not to be. And you can live with that if you haven't lost all of those previous opportunities. It's not that yesterday happened. It's that Michigan State happened. It's that at Ohio State happened. It's that at Indiana happened. It's that Seton Hall happened. All of those things
have played, right?
I mean, they've all contributed to this issue.
Nate, they've played 17 games this season. 8 of the 17 have been decided by 5 points or less.
Yeah.
So the combination of close games, great competition. That's why you play the number one schedule. Like everybody else, now everybody's dealing with this part, the COVID part, but they had a pause. They had to come out of it. They had some condensed games, but everybody's dealing with COVID, but it's still an issue. And other outside circumstances, do you think the team at this point has hit a wall mentally and physically, because you can see the efforts there, but like, there's not the same jump as before?
Yeah, I always struggle with this because I don't live in their head, right? And I mean, one thing that comes to mind for me is even last year, Miles Dredd, or maybe it was 2 years ago, Miles Dredd was asked about being in a shooting slump, and he was like, you know, they practice so much. Right, like they play the game so much that things that look like slumps to us are.
Yeah, but I'm not.
We have such a very limited window of seeing it. So, in the span of Miles Dredd's career, he's been having slumps forever. Right?
But Nate, I'm not talking about the shooting part. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that extra jump where the body is willing. It's not quite like you're not quite, you'll get a deflection, but not quite get the steal. You'll get to a rotation, but you're a half step. Like, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not, the shooting part happens. I mean, that happens.
Yeah. But I would argue that they had it in the last 8 minutes yesterday. That they had, I mean, that, you know, Jamari Wheeler's steal, some of the pressure stuff that they had in the three quarter court. John Hara again. You know, some of these offensive rebounds are incredible. Again, like the last, they had a possession for what, a minute and 8 seconds? Right. You know, and then they have a turnover, and that's what loses it for them.
Live ball turnover, but again, they make the mental mistake as players because the bench was yelling foul.
Yep.
The bench was yelling to foul.
Yep.
And the players didn't foul him. In other words, not so he doesn't score. Okay, let's take the obvious low-hanging fruit off the table. It's so you can set your defense.
Right. Yep. Yeah, and I asked Ferry yesterday after the game whether or not he had considered at any, you know, after the first offensive this is a basketball thing that certainly there are others who are smarter than me, but after the first offensive rebound, I thought maybe they could have spent a timeout to set the offense again, but you know he just said that he didn't want to give the opportunity for Nebraska to set its defense, and I understand that. You know, that's basketball. It's Jazz. They know what they're doing. They have a call. They make it on the floor, and you go. But it seemed so frenetic. You know, there wasn't a composure to the way that they were able to operate in the last 2 minutes. And on a larger scale, you start to wonder if that's just history building on itself. It's just one game after another after another after another. It just, you know, starts to play into how you perform in those situations.
Well, it's never been an issue for you. All right.
That's right.
Thank you so much. There's no such thing in your world as physical or mental fatigue.
I was just watching the Golf Channel, and Jordan Spieth said that his failure was a physical one yesterday, and they rejected it outright. They said, no, you don't get to do that. It's the easy excuse when you're not having success, because if you acknowledge that it's a mental issue, then you've got all of these things that you have, this maze that's hard to understand that you have to sort through, you know, whereas the physical is something tangible, something that you can try to correct. And so that's golf, but you know, I think there is some application on the basketball side here as well.
Well, based on what I do, there's no mental fatigue. All right. Nate, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you having me.